Welcome to Cheers to This, the podcast where meaningful conversation is mixed with a good drink. I'm your host, Jay Hutchins, and today I'm joined by Lynn, who's an expert at creating a life of purpose while working through grief. We welcome you to pour yourself a glass and join the conversation. Hi, Lynn. How's it going?
Hi, Jay.
So excited that you're here today. Before we get going, I have a very important question for you. What's in your glass?
Root beer.
Ooh, good choice. Love a good root beer. Well, Lynn, do you happen to have a cheers for us today?
I do. I have cheers for this wonderful man, Jay Hutchins, and what he does. And that smile of his just lights up my day. So cheers to you, Jay.
Well, cheers. So Lynn, many people are intimately familiar with feelings of grief, but can you help us understand, though, why the pain and even the aftermath of grief is so unique?
Sure. I think that we think it's unique because in our country, we won't talk about it. Mm. We have a major taboo around talking about grief, death. You know, the psychological stuff is coming up a little bit, so we're not used to it. And when people start to talk about it, people get uncomfortable because they might say the wrong thing, they might do the wrong thing, they might hurt somebody's feelings. And so that's one part of it. And the other part is, if you haven't been through it, and you probably heard this, but it is absolutely true, you have no idea what it feels like. It is so devastating. There's really nothing like it. I mean, not even a breakup or something like that. It just totally changes your life like in 1 second. And I think that's what the thing is. And so I have kind of two prongs to what I do. One is to help educate people. This is how you work with someone who needs you while they're in grief.
Love
that. And these are the things you do, and these are things you don't do, and say and don't say, that sort of thing. And then, of course, working with a person who is coming out of the emotional aspects and beginning to think, gee, I don't want to stay here. There's got to be something better out there. And so they're beginning to work on, okay, what's next for me?
I love this two-pronged approach. And I want to talk about both prongs of it, but before we do, I do want to level set on one more thing really quickly. You know, what do we as a society tend to actually get wrong the most about grief?
Oh, not talking about it, just, you know, refusing to acknowledge it. And I've just done a series on LinkedIn about different cultures, what Americans have to learn from different cultures on how they handle grief. And it's fascinating. You know, there are a few of us that are like we are and just don't want to deal with it. But then there's some that celebrate and, you know, celebrate life and they bring family together for extended periods, all sorts of things that would be very helpful to us.
Oh, yeah. I can definitely see that, because that silence that we incorporate into our grieving process, I'm guessing it can't be the healthiest approach most of the time for us.
No. And the loneliness. We don't heal alone. Mm-hmm. We need to be with other people who know what's going on and have, you know, empathy, understands.
Yeah. Speaking of the loneliness, I know although grief can feel like a lonely journey, we're usually navigating it while still having to kind of interact with other people. You know, when we encounter someone that's processing grief, what are some things that we should probably be aware of when engaging with the person that's processing their grief?
I think the most important thing is to just be there for them. Whether you go to their house and sit, don't worry about anybody talking. Whether you pick up the phone and say, hey, I'm thinking about you today. Just want you to know I'm here. Love you. Talk to you in another couple of days. Just that keeping a human connection going is huge. And I think that's where we fall down so much, is that we think we have to do something. We're Americans. We fix things. Well, these people are not broken, so don't even try to fix them. That's not going to help at all. And in our inability to deal with it, in our willingness, our kind of push to fix things, we start telling them what to do. We start saying things that are incredibly hurtful, not on purpose. We don't mean to hurt somebody, but we've heard people say these things, so it just comes out of our mouths, and we have no idea how that is being interpreted. So part of that prong, I think, as difficult as it is, people in grief need to teach their family and friends how to work with them, how to be with them. So that's really an important thing. I have to laugh at this. I must have gotten 13 by 9 pans of lasagna.
Grief lasagna.
I was giving them away to my daughters every time they showed up, and finally they said, no, go away, no more lasagna. And, you know, that's just people trying to be helpful, but mm-hmm. think, one person, they don't really want to eat. Mm-hmm. They maybe graze a little bit. They don't want to cook. They don't want to have to prepare things. Just do something small. And if you want to give them a 2, put one in the freezer, perfectly all right. But it's one person. And, you know, so maybe some crackers and cheese, maybe a small bowl of fruit, something they can just graze on. They're not worried about eating properly. They can barely get anything down. They're so emotional. So it's really important for us to understand that. And I mean, I've even heard of people who deliver grief groceries, and it's just a small bag of groceries that are easy to deal with right now. And, you know, it might be a fruit tray, who knows, but those are very thoughtful things to do. And you don't ask them, because they don't know. Don't say, what can I do for you? They don't know. They don't know what's going to make them feel better. They're so miserable. So the thing is, be there, be supportive, be loving, and don't tell them, oh, aren't you over this yet?
Oof.
Oh, he's in a better place. No, I want him here. You know?
Yeah.
Even the best Christians are going to say that. I want him here. I don't want him anyplace else. So don't just say something. Say things like, I'm here for you. I know this is difficult. Anytime you want to talk, I am here. You don't have to talk either. I'm still here.
You know, that's a bit ironic. You know, we talked a bit earlier about the fact that as a culture, we're silent about grief itself. But then when we're actually with someone that's grieving, we suddenly have a problem with silence. So it's quite ironic.
Well, we do anyway. We do anyway. You know, if you say something and you don't say anything else, the other person is going to eventually jump in. So, you know, that's what we do.
You know, a lot of people on the outside definitely can offer support, but much of the work of processing grief is really deeply personal. I mean, how do you even begin to do that work if you're at the beginning of experiencing a loss?
I think that you need to understand that you can't.
Mm.
Your brain is such that it has to reacclimate itself to the new conditions. So think of it like this. If you get up in the middle of the night and need to go to the bathroom, chances are you don't need a light. You know where everything is. Your brain has mapped that. Mm-hmm. Well, your brain has mapped your life. So when somebody's missing, it's going, whoa, what's going on here? You know, something needs to be here and it's not here. And so it takes it a while to remap. And then the interesting thing about grief is it has to remap and remap and remap as you go through the various things that you go through. So it's very confusing to your brain. And you know, those stages they talk about, I don't go for that. I mean, those things happen, but it's not linear. So I might be this one day and this one the next day and two different ones the next day. And, you know, it's not linear. So and that's what makes it also confusing to your brain as well as to you, because why am I still crying all the time? Why was I able to laugh at that? You're just really, I like to think of it like you're in a hot air balloon, not tethered to anything.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I can picture that.
There's just no stability.
Yeah. So I know somebody's probably listening to this that's experiencing grief, you know, and they're probably upset at what you just said.
Probably.
You know, the brain has to remap, and the phases of grief, they aren't linear, and you just have to go through it. Why can't they just rush through it?
Your brain is trying to protect you. That's part of its job. And it will not let you do things that it feels will hurt you. And sometimes that's good and sometimes that's bad. But in this process, I think one of the central things people need to understand is that you lose your identity. This morning I was a wife. This afternoon I'm not. Who in the world am I? What's happened?
Yeah.
You know, and so we are dealing with all of that. Our emotions are going crazy. And we know, you know, it's been proven that when we're very emotional, we cannot make rational decisions. Our brain just doesn't work that way. Mm-hmm. So trying to make big decisions, trying to push forward just doesn't work. There's a process. It is different for everybody. Mm-hmm. We do it our own way, but we can't just avoid it, because when we do, then it becomes a physical ailment or an emotional or mental ailment. And I think it's in the DSM now that there is such a thing as heartbreak deaths.
Oh, yeah. That I believe is that broken heart syndrome that they nicknamed
it? Yeah. Yep.
I mean, that kind of weight of trying to recalibrate life, it can't be easy for anyone. So I know we are all different in the way we process, and we're all different in the way that we handle grief. But, you know, are there really, really extremes to the way people handle it? Or is there a kind of a commonality to it?
Well, the commonality, I think, is the emotional stuff you go through. Now, there are some people, I was talking with one friend and she said, well, I just didn't do anything. I have three businesses and I just got to work. And she came through it okay. Mm-hmm. So she wasn't pushing things down. She was dealing with them somehow. Mm-hmm. She wasn't ignoring it. And other people, I've had clients that have been grieving for 15 years. And, you know, it's so individual. Mm-hmm. And it has to do with our beliefs, how we think, mm-hmm. how we process. And all of that stuff needs to be dealt with before you can start really healing. And that's why I got into this, was that I realized grief groups are fine in the beginning when you need to say something. But the minute they get to be pity parties and everybody's crying and blah, 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 you need to get out of there, because that's not going to help you. You need to be in places where someone understands. If you can't do it yourself, which is incredibly difficult, then you need to be with somebody that knows what they're doing and can help you work through all of those pieces. It's like a huge puzzle that somebody's just thrown up in the air.
That puzzle that you're trying to piece together while it's midair, probably for half of
a lot of the time.
You know, that's a challenge within itself, you know. But I am very curious about some of these mistakes we've just talked about, right? Like dwelling too long in pity parties and the mistake of just trying to push through as fast as possible, right? We talked about those. From your perspective, what's actually the biggest mistake people make when going through the grieving process?
Shoving it down and trying to ignore it and not dealing with it. Mm-hmm. The dealing with it is sitting with it and letting it happen. And it will roll over you like a tsunami. Understand that it's going to be very painful. You can't control it. Mm-hmm. You know, the little child, I think it was a song or something. You can't go over it. You can't go under it. You can't go around it. You got to go through it.
Yes.
That's essentially what it is. And it takes, your body knows what to do with all of that emotion if you don't try stuffing it. And it will lessen over time. It's not going to go away completely. Don't expect that. But, you know, your body knows what to do. Think about it. You get a cut, put a Band-Aid on it, and your body does the rest. And that's true for so many things. And it's true with this emotional thing. So you have to let it kind of drain that stuff out and not try to stop it or push it or, you know, whatever with it.
So I'm just thinking about grief in general. Some people will say, you know what? I've dealt with grief before. I'm a pro at this. I've got this. But I get the sense that grief is different depending on the situation and who you're grieving, right? Mm-hmm. Like grieving a parent is different than grieving a spouse, which is different than grieving a child. You know, what kind of error is it when someone thinks they have grief down pat and they don't need any guidance or help, or they know their way through it without a doubt? Like, what kind of error is that?
Not being realistic, I think, and maybe not really having gone through it in an appropriate way. Mm-hmm. They may have shoved everything down or ignored it. So, you know, that's a really good question, because I think we're all grieving right now. We're all grieving our life before COVID. We're all grieving the constant turmoil in our society. And, you know, people think, oh, I'm stressed. No, you're grieving. Mm-hmm. You need to understand that you're grieving for the loss of what was. Even this morning, you know, there could be something that has happened 2 hours ago that has caused you to just feel bad about it. And, you know, it's not the depth of grieving that there is when there's a significant loss, you know. And I mean, you lose your job, you lose your best friend, all those kinds of things can roll into the grief response. But I don't think any of them are as deep and significant as losing something that is so important, something that you have lived with for years. You have altered the way you are and the way you think so that there can be communication between the two of you. And that is just, that just rips the center out of you.
You talk about this ripping the center out of you and the brain being rewired. Is it normal to be afraid during the grieving process on what's on the other side?
Yes,
of grief?
Absolutely. And that stops a lot of people. And some of it has to do with some things people say, like, you're going on a date? You must not have loved him very much.
Oh,
I know. Ouch. Really? You know? And so we've got to just make space for people to do what they think is right at the moment. They're just following their emotions. And I often say this. I had a client who just, she just could not leave the house. And finally she said to me, you know, my best friend has just been bugging me. And I finally decided to go to coffee with her. And she said, you know what? That's the first time in 3 months that somebody didn't try to fix me. And so you're afraid of that too. I don't want people telling me what to do and how to deal with this. They're not here. So, you know, there's just so much to it that we just don't get that, because we see on the outside the sadness and the tears and the anger sometimes. You know, people are afraid. If I get angry, then I'm really showing that I didn't love him. He chose to not be here. Well, maybe he didn't choose it, but that's what the situation is that we're dealing with.
You know, a lot of people will say that they can basically transpose their experience with dealing with grief onto someone else's, that they see experiencing similar grief, right? They'll say, you know, I dealt with grieving a spouse. I can help push you through grieving your spouse. Why is that so unrealistic and actually maybe a bit unkind?
It's a bit unkind and it can be harmful. Because, first of all, everybody does it differently. And people think that just getting past the emotional aspect is you're healed, and you are absolutely nowhere near healed. There is so much that has to happen with you psychologically, emotionally, you know, all of those things to even get you to the space where you can think about what's next.
So let's say that traveling through grief is this path, right? And when you're traveling through, how do you recognize you're at the point in the path where you may be ready to embrace the fullness of life again, especially if the loss cut extremely deeply?
Yeah. I think the biggest thing is you get to a point where you start to feel a little bit antsy, I'd say, you know, like, so uncomfortable here. I'm just so sick of it. I don't want to stay here anymore. And of course, when you're crying your eyes out, you don't want to be there either. But this is just, there's a little nuance to it. And you think, you know, there's got to be more out there. There has to be something people survive this and they go on with their lives. So yeah. I don't know how to do it, but I'm going to find out and get some help.
Oh, asking for help is powerful and a challenge for a lot of Americans.
Yeah, absolutely. But let me say this. The number of things you have to go through, your self-limiting beliefs, mm-hmm. and analyze them and change them to something that is more supportive of you, mm-hmm. where you're going. You have to know your values. You have to know that they've shifted. You have to work on your mindset and how you process things. We can't do that very well by ourselves. Mm-hmm. That is hard. That is hard work. You know, I think people are afraid that it's just going to be so painful, but it really isn't, because we don't go back, or at least I don't go back into what happened. I find that that just reopens the wounds. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, my attitude is, okay, we're here. This is a situation. How do we go forward?
Lynn, I really appreciate this perspective here and us moving forward through grief. When someone feels like they've made it to the other side, right? They're like, I'm on the other side of grief. I'm living life to the fullness. What is something that they need to remember at that point?
I think they need to take the time to look at what they're doing and mm-hmm. How their emotions react to that. Are you truly happy? Mm-hmm. Or are you performing happy? Mm-hmm. You know, what are you telling yourself? Because we have all these stories that come from even childhood that we've made up to protect ourselves. Mm-hmm. And we have to get down to find out what those are and where they came from. And, you know, then ask the question, is that really true?
Ooh.
Am I really trying to live my parents' life? Am I really trying to, you know, make more money than my dad, or whatever your story is? Mm-hmm. That too isn't very easy to do, but it's necessary for you to free yourself up so that you can be the person that you came here to be. And another thing for women particularly, but men also, mm-hmm. we have to get through all those layers of garbage that we have taken on in life, all the roles and responsibilities and expectations. And, you know, so many of them aren't ours anyway.
Yeah. That makes total sense. And it sounds like a lot of work, but work that's absolutely worth it.
It is absolutely worth it. And if you're with somebody that is positive and can help you see, it's not really negative. It's like, oh my gosh, I made another step and I took another step, you know?
Yeah, I definitely get that. So Lynn, I do have one more question for you, if I may.
Sure.
Where the heck can people find you?
Well, that's easy, on LinkedIn and Facebook. I post almost daily some things, and I am just hopefully about to launch a platform, that membership platform that I have created, that is designed for when there's nobody there to help you and you are really needing something. So mm-hmm. it has all sorts of founder experts that are going to be giving their information and doing workshops and master classes and articles and videos. And wow. And the most important thing is that I'm creating a bunch of tools, interactive tools. Mm-hmm. So this is a funny one, hot mess reset, you know, I'm a hot mess today. And then you go in and work with it, and everything you do sends you out with two or three small steps, mm-hmm. but they're steps to move forward. And then you can go back to that one again to do another piece of it, or you can go to a different tool. I think it's just so exciting.
Man, it sounds like it's going to be an amazing platform that's going to help a lot of people, Lynn. Sounds amazing.
Yeah. Well, and you know, there's some people that just, I don't want to go to a psychiatrist or psychologist. Mm-hmm. I don't have the money to spend on a coach. Well, at least there's something here to help you.
Absolutely. If we may, I would love to offer maybe one more cheers here, Lynn.
All right.
Let's make a cheers to the magic of the brain, remapping, surviving, and thriving.
Isn't that the truth? All right.
Cheers. Lynn, thank you so much for being here today and for your wisdom and your guidance. and just absolutely everything. Just thank you so much.
Well, you're welcome.
We'll definitely lead people to that resource because I know there's somebody out there that definitely needs it.
And I don't want people to think it's just grief of losing a person. We go mm-hmm. through so many types of grief and they take our identity. You know, you lose your job.
Yeah, definitely. Grieving is a process that we go through our life, like you said earlier. It could be small things, large things, people that have been significant to our lives, you know. Yeah. It just takes so many different forms.
It does.
I hope people, you know, pay attention to those feelings and they begin a healthy processing way through it. I really
Absolutely.
Do.
Thank you so much, Jay, for the opportunity to spread my mission.
Oh, thank you so much, Lynn. And thank you to everyone that tuned in today and listened. And this has been Cheers to This.